the Mace Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by ESPN, NFL Nation, Titans reporter, Teron Davenport. Teron, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing really well. How are you guys doing?
We're good. So you were there at OTAs last week. We heard from Will Levis for the first time since the Titans courted and ultimately drafted Cam Ward. I thought he made the best of a bad situation. He put on a brave face, as I've said, and answered questions about his future with the team and how it felt for him to watch the Titans court and ultimately draft Cam Ward. What did you make of how Levis handled those questions? And I'm wondering if you think if push will have to come to shove at some point, and if it's best for the franchise to remove Will Levis from the locker room, because I'm not saying he's going to be a distraction. He's not going to act out. But I'm wondering if just his presence could ultimately be a distraction for the Titans as this season progresses.
Yeah, I don't think his presence would be a distraction. I think everybody has grown. They understand the situation and the change from last year to this year. So I think he'll be fine. But I do like the way he handled it. I think he is taking on a bad situation head on. And he's willing to put in the work. He's already done that. And he's just going to continue to try to put the best foot forward. And, I mean, you can't expect nothing less from him. So I think that's good that he did that. It's obviously not a situation anybody wants to be in. He accepts it and understands it, and he's just going to work through it.
You wrote a story for ESPN.com that published this morning about Cam Ward already earning the respect from the Titans veterans and the offensive linemen. And reporting out this story and talking to people, what did you learn about how Cam Ward has gone about earning that respect?
Yeah, there's just a cool calmness to him that seems to rub off on others, and it's something that these guys recognize. And that story kind of came together just from different offensive linemen going out of their way to praise him. And I thought it was pretty cool. Like, it started with Skoronski and just rolled into everyone else. And, you know, J.C. Latham was very complimentary of him being a leader and doing things the way he does. And it just seems like he's a guy that has a relaxing presence, and that's even to the veterans.
The Titans had nearly perfect attendance at OTAs when reporters were out there last week. The notable exception, Jeffrey Simmons. I know that Derek has been adamant that he feels that Jeffrey Simmons should be there. I know that Brian Callahan said that if there's one player I'm not worried about preparing for the season, it's Jeffrey Simmons. Where do you fall on whether or not Jeffrey Simmons should have been at OTAs?
Yeah, I'm kind of in between. I think it's a situation where it's like, hey, optically, it looks good if he's there. And also, in addition to that, being there, the importance of it, I don't think for Jeffrey Simmons is as much to him being ready for the season, because we know, like Brian Callahan said, that that's going to be the case. I think it's more for the camaraderie, the team building, and those type of things. And it's interesting because J.C. Latham, so he was working out in Dallas with Dan Moore Jr. as well as Trey Smith. And he said that he pulled Trey Smith aside and was like, hey, man, you guys won a lot of close games. Why is it? Like, what is it to your team? And Trey Smith talked about the closeness and the camaraderie that they have, which is what Brian Callahan and the crew, they're striving to build that this year. So the earlier you could get a jump on that, the better. But I don't think it's the end of the world.
Yeah, TD, and my sentiment was this. I know Jeffrey's going to work hard. I don't question whether he's going to be ready for a season, because I think he has proven that. Now, do I want the production to get better? Absolutely, I do.
Yeah.
But I think in this time, this critical time, when you look at your record and it's been 9-32, no one gets a pass. No one. Mm-hmm. I think everybody has to be there. And I am pointing sort of the arrow at Simmons, because this is the guy that over the last two seasons prior to this one, they've been trying to push him as the leader. He's been saying he's the leader of this team. And my thing was, hey, listen, if you want to be a leader, man, sometimes you have to sacrifice those things. And I thought one would be a sacrifice here was, I know you're working hard, but this team is 9-32. You need to tell your trainer, hey, I'll see you in a couple of days. Let me go down here just at least at the start of camp. I know it's not voluntary, but these young guys need to see me out there, because the only thing they know about this team is that they have a 9-32 record over the last 2.5 seasons. So me, as a guy that's a leader, supposedly, I got to be there.
Yeah, no, it sends a message to me if he's there. And as you mentioned, if he changes his routine mm-hmm. and is there, it sends a message. And it places a higher level of importance. And to me, when I look at that, like, you know, if he's there, you know, what can Tavondre Sweat say about not being there, right? You know what I mean? And that's exactly. Not to say that he's been absent. He wasn't there when we were there last week. But, like, if Jeff is there, like, no one else has an excuse. And I think that's something that should be noted.
Now, what do you think, because I know you've spoken with Denard Wilson, and I think a lot of this, man, I truly do. I think a lot of this and what the Titans are able will be able to do, hopefully, a lot of it does hinge. I know it's the quarterback, but a lot of it does hinge on whether Denard Wilson can get this defense to being, you know, legitimately a top, you know, 10 defense. I know they were number 2 overall, but when you look at points given up, they were damn near dead last. What has been sort of the thing with Denard Wilson this season that you've seen or that he said?
Communication mm-hmm. and everybody just doing their own job. It was funny because on one of the plays that Cam Ward, he hit one of the guys like on a deep dig route, and Denard Wilson went crazy on the linebacker because he didn't drop back enough. You know, those types mm-hmm. of things, the little things that make a difference in a play. It seems like that's the focus. And he did say he's going to call games a little bit differently. We'll see how that works. But, yeah, there's going to be a difference in him. And I think, you know, he's just working to reduce the mental errors and those types of things. And to me, like, you know, what you emphasize and focus on, those usually are the results.
Teron Davenport is with us. Teron, we've focused so much on Cam Ward. I'm curious, who has maybe caught your attention among the rookie class from a coach that said something or your observation, anybody that you've got on your radar?
Yeah, well, I like Sammy Oladejo looks really good with that number 7 on. It's a pretty sweet number for an outside linebacker. But, I mean, look, Elik Iomanner is the one that really caught my attention. And it just, you know, whenever I watch him and see him, I start to like him a little bit more. I was watching him last week, and the way he comes off the ball, when it snapped, like every route is there's somewhat of a sense of urgency to it. Now, I'm not saying the sense of urgency like Calvin Ridley has, because that's the most urgent player that I've seen run routes, but I still feel like I like the way he sells the 9 route, you know, and I like the way he just digs in and runs his routes. He catches the ball pretty well. He had a nice diving catch at practice last week. It was a corner route he ran, and Cam Ward just kind of guided him towards the sideline, and he dove and caught it, you know, and popped up, and that was a really good play. So, yeah, Iron Manor is the rookie that stands out to me.
Can you give us a little more insight on the J.C. Latham? Because just from a macro, from where I sat last year, I saw a guy that looked very promising as a left tackle, did some good things, clearly was very young, has a lot to grow into, but his ceiling looks high. I didn't really hear, maybe I missed it, but I didn't hear a whole lot about, man, he's got to drop some weight. He's got to lose weight to really be what he wants to be. Tell me where that came from, the wanting to reshape yourself as he moves over to the other side.
Yeah, he said it was the Texans game. That's when he really started to begin to have that thought process, right? And, you know, Danielle Hunter gave him work. Will Anderson, his teammate at Alabama, gave him work, you know, and it was an embarrassing game for him. That's what he said. And so I think really the losing weight If you, I mean, that goes all the way back to the season opener against the Bears, man. Daryl Taylor hit him with an inside move and ended up, you know, knocking Levis silly and made him fumble. And that was a key turnover in the game. So you have those things that happen. And when you lose weight, you know, he was up to, he said, between 365 and 370. Like, that's big. And when you lose weight, it allows you to better stay in front of the pass rusher, you know, and that's something that he's looking to do. And, you know, he told me that he changed his diet. He eats a lot of salmon with asparagus, and he likes to have like a cauliflower mash. It's kind of like a mashed potato, but it's made with cauliflower, you know, and he snacks on granola bars. And like, it's not the best snack, but like, that's what I do. And he eats two times a day, and it's been really just like focusing on the calorie intake, like counting that and keeping that manageable. And it's worked so far. You know, he's down to 337, I believe. And he said he wants to get to like, you know, 325. So we'll see how it works.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, joining us on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, as he does every Monday at 1 o'clock. Teron, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll chat next week.
All right, for sure. Appreciate you guys.
Teron Davenport on the program. And Willie, I'm glad you brought up J.C. Latham, because I was meaning to talk about J.C. Latham and his physical transformation last week. We didn't get a chance to get to it. Also, you know what sounds incredibly unappetizing? Cauliflower mash. I'm sure I've had it at some point. Doesn't sound great.
I'm sure I haven't.
I might have had it as a side dish, maybe underneath. You know, sometimes you have the bed of cauliflower mash on top of the fish or the steak. I don't know. But J.C. Latham was on Bussin' with the Boys with Taylor Lewan and Will Compton recently. And he detailed, as Teron just laid out there, why he decided to go through this physical transformation and how it can help him moving forward.
Off the field, like my weight. Honestly, I remember specifically.
What are you pushing right now?
Oh, well, now I'm 340. I'm good. Yeah. Like, well, I'm not going to say I'm good, but I want to get down like 325, 330. But then, because I was 360, and they were like, hey, we want you to get down 345. And honestly, I wouldn't say it's kind of cocky, but I kind of say just like coming from Bama, I remember Saban saying the same thing when I hit 360, and all the strength coaches were like, well, he put on 15 pounds of muscle. So it's like, you know what I mean? Like, he's going to be okay. You know, and then they saw how I was moving out there, and Saban was like, okay, he's good, you know. So having the thumbs up approval from Saban, I was like, okay, I know how this is going to go. They're going to say I need to lose weight. As soon as they see how I move out here, they're going to say I'm good. And then after a while, I was like, you know what, like, this is a different speed, so I definitely should lose weight. But I'm not going to say I was playing good, but I was playing, like, relatively, like, honestly good. Like, you know what I mean? So yeah. I was, like, thinking, like, well, I don't think my weight's that much of an issue. And I literally remember thinking that, like, after we played the Chargers, like, because I did a really good job in pass pro, and the only sacks that I remember, Bud Dupree had two, and it was like off of like a late spin when Will tried to escape the pocket up, and yeah, that's where his sacks came from. And I remember I was like, man, I just played Bosa and, you know, Bud Dupree, and, you know, I've been doing good up until this point. I don't think my weight's an issue. And like from there, just, yeah, it was really bad. So
that was J.C. Latham on Bussin' with the Boys explaining his physical transformation. And as Teron mentioned, he's down into the 330s, 335, 336, that range. And I saw a picture of J.C. Latham, who weighs twice as much as I do, and he looks better at 340 pounds than I do at my weight.
Because like, his is muscle.
Yeah, he is a cut 330-plus pounds. But clearly he felt that his weight got to him in the second half of the season, and it led to him not playing to the best of his ability. But Derek, also with the fact that Latham is now shifting over to right tackle, what do you make of J.C. Latham's physical transformation and his reasons for it?
I think he's doing what a professional does. I think he's doing what, guys that want to be great, they find something in their game that they can improve each and every year. Listen, as a rookie, I know he probably thought it was good. He played against Bosa and those guys and Dupree, and he felt he did a good job. I wouldn't say Dupree. I mean, Dupree, he showed he's okay, but he's no Joey Bosa. But he was able to do a good job on Joey Bosa, and I think sometimes when that happens, you get this false sense of I'm good. But then the game has a way of humbling you. I don't care how big or strong or fast you are. It finds a way to humble you. And he got humble, and he understood very quickly, like, listen, I can't come in the same player this season as I finished last season. I got to come in a much better player. And part of it is changing my diet, changing my physique, knowing that I'm on the other side now, being more comfortable on that side, so to speak. I want to be a perennial all-pro. I want to be someone that the Titans can count on. All that comes if you transform your body. You transform, you know, your technique somewhat. You get better, stronger, bigger, and more knowledgeable about the position. So this is why for rookies it's so hard to, you know, truly like get on them, because you know how hard the season is, especially for guys that are in the trenches each and every play. It's like, yeah, they may do well at the beginning, but then fatigue sets in. You know, the strain and the length of a NFL season, how grueling it is, it starts to wear on you, and you start to play, your play starts to dip some. And we saw that in J.C. Latham, and he even explained it. So he wanted to make sure that he went into the offseason, that he comes back, that that the weight, even though he felt he was okay at one point, but he understood these guys are much bigger, stronger, and faster. I need to get some of this weight down. Now he will come into camp feeling more comfortable, I believe, at the weight he's at now. And he even said he wanted to drop more than that. So you just try to do whatever you can as a player to make sure that when you come in the next following season, you're better than what you left off.
615-737-1025. Your thoughts on J.C. Latham dropping a whole lot of weight, basically dropping my toddler in weight. My toddler's around 40 pounds, so he dropped an entire Arlo. I guess we could call it that. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we have heard from Jeffrey Simmons, sort of. We'll discuss that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game. So that was a social media video posted by Jeffrey Simmons over the weekend, I believe on Saturday. Another one of those glossy social media videos, Willie. Lots of action shots of Jeffrey Simmons lifting heavy weights, pounding it on the treadmill, doing that thing with the ropes that I don't understand that you see athletes do all the time. And it's almost like Jeffrey Simmons and his social media team were like, hey, We gotta show that you're working out. You're not at OTAs. We better put out a video showing that you're working out. So I did get a chuckle out of that, considering all of the discussion we had about Jeffrey Simmons over the week, over last week.
Can
I
just
say.
Ask a question? Because this is before we try to get into the mind of Jeffrey Simmons and why and all this, try to read minds, which that's kind of I feel like that's the summer job. When we talk to Titans, we just try to read people's minds. What does this post mean, or what does this quote mean? But you mentioned the ropes. When was the first time you saw somebody do the rope thing? Because I can tell you, I saw that. I don't know what workout facility it was. It could have been a YMCA. It could have been a training room. I don't remember exactly. But I saw somebody doing that. It might have been at Vanderbilt's. Might have been when I was in college. I saw somebody doing that. I was like, huh, what's that guy doing? That looks pretty easy. Grab those ropes one time and try to do it for about 30 to 60 seconds. That is a brutal workout.
I think it's called the battle rope workout. I think that's what it's called.
Battle rope. I'm sorry. I'm sorry not to get the lingo. But that is.
I just had to look it up. So
it is not. It is not.
But that seems to be the exercise du jour. Whenever you watch one of those social media videos of somebody exercising, they got to be doing the rope thing. I'm like, huh, that's cool, I guess. But
all right.
But Jeffrey Simmons, one texter says, Robert says, how do we know those aren't old clips of him working out? LOL.
They're not old clips.
Hey, pull out the workout clips from last year. I'm on the beach.
Oh, man. I don't think they're workout clips.
No, I know.
Listen, again, I don't think, at least I can only, you know, be responsible for the things that I say or think. I never thought that Jeffrey wasn't working out. And I understand that, you know, today's players, you know, they want to put out social media posts and show the fans what they're doing. But it's ironic that it comes out right after, you know, he doesn't show up. And I'm not saying, listen, I'm not getting on him like that. Y'all know why I think he should have shown up, because they are 9-32 and it'll have 2.5 seasons. That's why he should have showed up. Should have been at camp on the first day. But it's just ironic that comes out after, you know, there's questions, you know, why Jeffrey isn't there and what that means about his leadership and everything else. So he's showing everybody that he's working, and rightfully so. I get it. But I'm not going, this doesn't sway me one way or the other. It's not like I thought Jeffrey wasn't working out, then he's put out this video and all of a sudden I think he's working out now. Now I'm happy and yay, it doesn't matter if Jeffrey wasn't there. No, it's the same thing. You know, I knew he was working out, so, but I still want him here. Why? Again, because nobody deserves a pass when you're 9-32 over the last 2.5 seasons.
So we were talking last week about the Titans defense and how rookie quarterbacks benefit greatly from having a great defense. And then I saw this statistic that was retweeted into my timeline from John Glennon from Klevta, which is a sports analytics service of some kind. And it was
Do the letters stand for something, or is that like somebody's aunt's name or something?
Klevta. I am not sure. But Klevta listed the percentage of snaps each defense faced versus backup quarterbacks in the 2024 regular season.
Ooh.
The Tennessee Titans, percentage of snaps versus backup quarterbacks, 33%.
Gosh.
Only two teams in the NFL had a larger share of snaps against backup quarterbacks, the Washington Commanders and the Cincinnati Bengals at 34% each. And as Glennon pointed out, among the backups that the Titans faced, Malik Willis, Snoop Huntley, Joe Flacco, Mac Jones twice, and Davis Mills, and the Titans went 1-5 in those six games.
That was one of the more disappointing parts of the beginning of the season, because they had some opportunities to maybe build a little confidence and take advantage of that. And the Malik Willis game is the A number one example, of course, but man, that should tell you how far this roster has to go before they're where they want to be.
So that puts the scoring defense into even, I guess, worse context, right? They faced backup quarterbacks on a third of all snaps, all defensive snaps. They went 1-5 in those games, according to John Glennon, and we saw where they finished the season.
And Klevta.
Thank you.
This is now Klevta is a new one I've never heard of, right? So let's now put it with the ones that we go Pro Football Focus and ESPN Stats and Info. And
yes, by the way.
Shots and stuff. So I've always wondered, with a stat like that, right, how many, when you're looking at an overall rating of a defense, have that in there, right? You've got to put the numbers in the computer. How do you do it? I'm not smart enough to know. You got these mathematicians that are always trying to tweak stuff and make their numbers more accurate. But when you have one big number that says, here's our defensive efficiency ranking, it's 21st or it's 19th, is something like that in there? I've always been curious. That's hard, right? Because like that's pretty extensive. If that computer system, that number cruncher knows to put it, to factor in the backup quarterback.
By the way, the LA Rams faced a backup quarterback on 1% of their snaps.
Oh, wow.
10 snaps all year for the LA Rams against a backup quarterback. 10.
That's insane.
And the Titans, 33%. 33% on the other end of the spectrum.
Has anybody ever been perfect? A perfect record without ever facing the backup quarterback?
The Rams came pretty darn close last season.
That is pretty close. That's a one hitter with two outs in the ninth inning. Who was the guy that had the 10 snaps?
It was
the Rams defense.
I can tell you.
The defense had to be going, we got the backup in here, guys. The backup's in.
I can tell you precisely, because Klevta told me the Rams only faced 10 snaps all year versus a backup, and that was Aiden O'Connell before he got hurt and left week seven. So I guess against the Raiders. So
he started quite a few of the games, actually.
Yes, Mike in Lebanon said the Titans have a long history of making backups and rookie quarterbacks look good. One texter says, if I can get this text to load, it's slow to load. But the crux of the text was that nobody is questioning. Here it is. No one questions Simmons' work ethic, and we know he'll be ready to play. But he's the supposed leader of the team, and he's not there. Just a bad luck. And Dustin in Hopkinsville, he's a little less diplomatic. He says, go on and shove that video somewhere, Big Jeff. It's not you on the field or workout we're concerned about. It's not showing up with and for the team.
Again, I know why he did it. And now people are looking at it as, you know, we just want you to be here. We don't care what you're doing, you know, outside the football building, because I don't think anyone ever questioned whether Jeffrey was working or not. It's they see the same things that I see or y'all see, that a team that hasn't been good and they see a guy that has been, you know, portrayed as a leader on this team. And again, I know Jeffrey has leadership qualities. They're trying to find a leader. And that's what the people see. They see a guy that has leadership qualities, want to be a leader, but isn't here on the first day. And then come to find out, everybody was there except him. The optics of that looks totally wrong. And I think sometimes we give guys more credit than what we should about being aware of certain things. I don't know if Jeffrey Simmons is aware, or he was aware that not come showing up would have people question whether, you know, his leadership, or is he a leader on his team? I don't think he really thought about it, or he really understood the temperature of what's going on. And that in itself isn't good when you're a leader. You got to know what's going on around you. You have to. You got to know the optics of things.
So what was it, a couple of years ago? I guess it would have been after the Bengals loss in the playoffs. Ryan Tannehill just so happened, someone posted him with a Celsius ad or something. He was on the boat right when he wasn't at OTAs, and people were like, how dare he be on a boat?
Yes.
When he's not supposed to, after he choked away the Bengals game, this, that, and the other thing. I'm wondering if this, to me, I don't know Jeffrey Simmons, but sort of piggybacking off of Derek here, to me, that felt like he is aware of what's being said, so let's post a video of him exercising, just so that people know that while I'm not here, I'm working out. I think it was calculated. I don't think it was a coincidence.
Yeah, and again, there's nothing necessarily wrong with it. I'm not saying he's doing wrong, because he's not. But again, you gotta know the surroundings. You gotta know the temperature. You gotta know how it looks. You know how the optics look when everyone is there. Everyone, they said it would have been a perfect attendance. And you may have ran this through Callahan. I get it. And Callahan can't force you to come. But the optics of it looks totally bad when they say everyone was there. Not everyone was outside. Because what did I say? I said, if he was there, then I reserved to pull back, you know, my criticism of him. But everyone was there except Jeffrey Simmons.
Well, the question I have for the both of you quickly is, I know that Brian Callahan can't force.
Or would have been a perfect attendance.
Right.
I know everybody wasn't there, but a perfect attendance considering.
Brian Callahan, of course, can't force Jeffrey Simmons to be there because OTAs are, everybody, voluntary. Mm-hmm. So we know that Brian Callahan can't compel Jeffrey Simmons to be there. But I'm wondering if he could have had a conversation and said, look, Jeff, I know that you don't have to be here. I know that you have your own workout set up. I do think, however, it would be important for you to be here. I'm not going to tell you that you have to be here because I can't. But wink, wink, nudge, nudge, it would be great if you showed up, at least for the part where the media was here.
Yeah, he has to, I think. You know, and again, that's why I said be in the building. If you're in the building, we got another conversation. We're going to talk about something different. I'm going to change my answer, and we're going to talk about something different. But when you're not even in the building, people can't even give you an excuse. You know, people can't even say, well, you know what, Jeff was here, but he was inside working, you know, just into stretching or in the weight room with the weight coach, you know, just, but he's here with the guys. He was in the meeting rooms. He's good. That lands better than you wasn't here, period. You see what I'm saying? So, you know, to me, it was just, again, it's not a bad guy, didn't do anything wrong, but when you are in the position that you are as an organization, you're searching for guys that are willing to sacrifice. And I can't tell you to come, but when we're sitting down and we had that conversation, like, okay, listen, these are our days, Jeff. I know it's not voluntary. You can't say, well, coach, I ain't going to be in there on the first day. At least, I make sure I'm there on the first day. I make sure I'm there. But then I do have some things I need to do, or I can come, you know, every so many days. But the first day, you got to be there.
And I wonder, too, if it's just easier. Maybe it's just a load off his mind to not be sitting there going, oh, boy, they're going to ask me a bunch of questions, and they're going to try to pinpoint me, and I'm tired of answering all these questions about leadership and all that stuff. And it's hard, right? I can see that. And so maybe somebody says, well, let's just show people what you're doing here. You don't have to answer any questions. We'll let the pictures speak for themselves. I can see that angle, but it doesn't have the impact with the media, for sure, that you're looking for, right? But I can kind of get a little bit of, man, I just don't want to sit there. I know these press conferences. Now, you can go to the people and say, your media relations people, and say, you know what? I don't want to talk. They're going to be all over me. I just don't want to do it right now. I want to be here. I want to work on my game, and let's talk again in training camp or something like that. But I just get the feeling he doesn't want to be out in front answering a lot of questions right now. That's the vibe I'm getting, but you tell me if you disagree.
Well, I would hope that, considering he is one of the highest paid players on the team, if not the highest paid player on the team, considered by many to be the best player on the team, I would hope that he would be okay answering tough questions. We did have a couple of texters last week suggest that he's doing this on purpose because he likes poking the media. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that's the case. But part of being up front as a member of a team is fielding tough questions. So
yeah,
he could have avoided it by showing up, because the first time he does show up, as soon as something is mandatory, who is the first player that every reporter and camera and microphone is going to be looking for? Jeffrey Simmons. Mm-hmm. So he's making it a bigger story by not being there. 615-737-1025. We will wrap up the show coming up next. I can't imagine Jared Stillman will be doing any gloating after what happened in the Nashville Regional this past weekend, but we'll find out together. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game. D. Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Stillman and Company coming up next. And rumor has it that the show open is going to be replaced by the Louisville fight song. Do I understand that correctly? We'll find out at 2 o'clock. Jared Stillman with us. So, Jared, last week you said that you were wrong about Tim Corbin. You heaped praise upon Tim Corbin, and deservedly so. Does the outcome of the Nashville Regional change your mind in any way?
I just want you guys to hear this. Just, this is how I feel. That's not even the fight song. It's just,
A
great weekend for Louisville baseball. This weekend, the Vanderbilt Regional Champions. I'd like to, everyone says I'm too negative. I'd like to be positive today. Can I be positive today, gentlemen?
This is,
go ahead.
This would be like you, what the Colts raised a 2014 AFC finalist banner. A Nashville Regional Champion banner has that same vibe, I think. I think you have higher expectations than that.
I mean, do I have higher expectations? I did not have higher expectations than Louisville coming in here and being the team that survived. It goes 3-0 against the Vandy boys. And with the way Vanderbilt had been playing baseball, I'm as shocked as anybody about what happened this past weekend. I was shocked by what happened in the Wright State game, but when Vanderbilt survived. And I think if Vanderbilt were still playing, there'd be a lot more talk about the end of that Wright State game. And I don't know how in the world they overturned that call. And then they replayed it. I couldn't even see the ball on the replay. But outside of that eighth inning against Wright State, I mean, they got outplayed by Wright State in two games over, I believe, 16 out of the 18 innings. They were significantly outplayed by Wright State. I did not see that coming. Louisville, you know, I kept telling all my friends, I was at the game on Saturday, and I kept saying to everyone, like, hey, like, and I say we because I was with Louisville people, and I'm a Louisville person, and I was in the crowd, and I said, like, hey, if we go in there and make a bunch of mistakes, Vanderbilt is going to pounce on them like a boa constrictor. And every mistake you make, the way this team had been playing, as I mean, in the SEC tournament, they bludgeoned Tennessee off of their mistakes. I said, if you make mistakes, you're going to lose. And Louisville made almost every mistake to allow Vanderbilt to score. Vandy didn't have an extra base hit. If Louisville doesn't have a pass ball, if Louisville doesn't, you know, throw to the wrong base, if Louisville doesn't, you know, the third baseman got greedy and he tried for the tag, missed, decided to throw to first. I was sitting behind the first base dugout. I'm like, no, no, keep it, keep it. And he throws it over the first baseman's head. If Louisville doesn't make those three mistakes, Vandy doesn't score a run. And so I'm trying to figure out the how this happened to the Vanderbilt team that I had been watching for the last month. But I am as shocked and stunned as anybody else.
Yeah, baseball can be cruel like that, where you can look that way. I think more so than other sports. I think all sports have it, but I think basketball probably the least. Football probably the second least. I would say hockey and baseball are more prone to having examples we can think of where a team is on such a roll and then suddenly it just seems like the magic runs out. But you're right. I think the second game, Jared, was the key game. The second game, if Vanderbilt finds a way to do what they had been doing for weeks, which is grind out, find a way to win, be opportunistic, like I really thought the door was open when that third baseman for Louisville was struggling and set the table, second and third, no outs. I was like, this is the moment. Vanderbilt's got the pitching to shut him down, and they didn't do it. The second, third, no outs, they don't score. And that had not happened to them in a while, right? They had been pulling out these games. And I think from there, the weight hit a little more.
I said I was sitting next to my buddy's 8-year-old, who's a huge, huge diehard U of L fan. And I said to him, you know, early in the game, R.J. Austin came up to bat. And I said, this is the guy who we do not want to see in a big moment in this game. Because I am familiar with what R.J. Austin has done, especially in the postseason at Vanderbilt, and he was a non-factor this weekend. You know, he was a non-factor in that moment you brought up, Willie. He has the bases loaded down 5-1 in the Wright State game. I thought that when they popped out on the 3-0 pitch, I thought Vanderbilt was done. You know, credit to them that they didn't give up till the end. But and I think the other thing to highlight is I think Tim Corbin had a bad weekend. And it's okay to say somebody who's a really good coach has a bad weekend. I thought he had a bad weekend. From the standpoint of his guys, you know, they weren't playing relaxed. He would be the first to admit that. I thought he had a bad weekend with his pitching decision on Saturday night to bring in Fennell in the to try to win the second game. I felt like at that point with Louisville having the lead, he probably needed to hold him back because regardless, you're going to be playing on Saturday anyway. So I thought that was a massive mistake that Tim Corbin made. And then I also thought that he didn't look very classy in the press conference on Saturday night, and I was a little disappointed by that. So I have to say, you know, again, R.J. Austin had a tough series. He wasn't the only one, you know, at the plate that had a tough regional, but I thought Tim Corbin had a tough weekend. For a guy who is a fantastic coach, I thought he had a tough weekend.
Jared,
I think all that is fair. And this is what baseball is, right? It's a, especially the team that loses in the postseason, things I can go back to. You know, name a postseason in the 80s that I was watching as a kid. I can name you decisions that have been questioned for 40 years since, right? That's part of why we love baseball. The Fennell decision was gutsy. They had been doing that. They had been piggybacking Connor Fennell, who was probably their most effective pitcher. He's their hottest pitcher. They had been piggybacking him off of Bowker, the guy that started against Louisville, for a couple of weeks, and it was really effective, especially against Tennessee and Kentucky the 2 weeks before that. So, but with them down a run, these are the tough decisions in a regional. If I win this game, I'm sitting pretty. I only need one more win. But if you lose, you know you're playing a, you're sending a bullet out there that it's hard. You got to then win three more games. These are the really, really tricky decisions you got to make, and it backfired on them. And I'll say one more thing before I turn it to you, Adam. With the, I think it was second and third, nobody out. The first guy up there, they're down 3-2. After Louisville has opened the door, the crowd's going, the third baseman is kind of reeling a little bit. The momentum is on Vanderbilt's side. Colin Barzy hits a rocket right at the third baseman. If that's 5 feet either way, which is Vanderbilt, those kind of hits had been falling for them for weeks, right? Every time they needed the hit, they got it. He hits it as hard as you can hit a ball, but it's right at the third baseman. They get an out, and they wiggle out of the inning as a result. These are just the random thing, the randomness, the bounces, the balls finding holes, the game of inches. That is baseball in a nutshell.
Well, it's funny you say that because I was talking to Dan McDonald about this either yesterday or Saturday night, and the Louisville coach, and I said to him, I go, you know what's so funny is the margins in these things are so small. And I think we've all now as a city, whether you're a UT fan or a Vandy fan, I think we've been through it enough that where everybody really knows how small the margins are. You know, in 2014, Vandy won the national title. They played Louisville in the first game of the College World Series. And there was an at-bat where the ninth place hitter, questionable, you know, 3-2 pitch, they called ball four. And Dansby Swanson laces a bases-clearing double on the next pitch. And it's like, if you get that call, how much does that not only change the game, but change the outlook for everything? And I think there was some of that for Vanderbilt in the Louisville game, you know, a bounce here, a bounce there. But again, I felt like it wasn't like, in my opinion, Louisville hung on because Vandy put it to him. I thought the only reason that Vandy was in the game was because of the mistakes Louisville had made. And that offensive ineptitude all weekend long, I mean, that's the story of the weekend, whether Tim Corbin wants to address it or not. And I keep trying to figure out how the team that was just, they hit with power in the SEC. They were huge in the clutch in the SEC. They could hit, they could move guys over, they could bunt, they could run the bases. They were a sexy baseball team to watch. How that happened and deteriorated the way it did over that regional, I still don't understand. And it's like Joe's column in The Athletic pointed out, it's not like Wright State was throwing future major leaguers, at least we don't think, future major leaguers up there. These are guys with ERAs in the fives and the eights.
Jared, Tennessee has an opportunity to advance out of the Knoxville regional today against Wake Forest. If the Vols win, does the pendulum swing back toward the Vols in any way, considering what Vandy did against Tennessee this season?
I don't think it swings back if Tennessee wins, although Tennessee fans will claim that it does. I think it swings back to Tennessee if they get back to Omaha. If they go to Omaha, then the fact that Vandy won the SEC, the fact that Vandy spanked him in the SEC tournament, and the fact that Vanderbilt took 3 out of 4 against him this year is kind of a moot point. So if I'm Vanderbilt, I'm cheering hard for Wake Forest today. If I'm a Vandy fan that cares about the rivalry on Twitter, and if I am a Tennessee fan, and I'm just going to use Chad Withrow as the example here for all of us, if I'm...
Did we lose Jared?
I think we may have lost
Jared. I think so.
We lost Jared.
I thought I was lost for a second. I was like, hey, exactly. They cut me off early.
I'm sure a lot of fans right now are like, yeah! No, we love Jared, of course. And Jared will be back on, hopefully, in a few minutes on Stillman & Company. I figured he would want to gloat a little bit about Louisville emerging out of Nashville. Hello, Jared. You're back.
Yes.
You're back.
I just cut out for a second.
Yes. If you said anything profound, we did not hear it.
I just took a crack at Chad Withrow. That was it.
And now we'll never know exactly.
He must have sabotaged you somehow.
Yes, he must have known you were about to. But Stillman & Company, of course, is coming up next. Vanderbilt making the wrong type of history. The first number one overall seed to not even make its regional final in the current tournament format. Jared will pick up the conversation coming up next.
Be love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, wonderful Monday. Peace.